Okay, Abbas, I want to start. We're going to be learning some Hilchas Tainis, Kabbalah's Tainis shortly. Before that, I want to share with you. I just read a little bit about Louis Braille, random. I just read it, Braille. The story goes of Louis Braille, who was working in his father's. I understand the way. Please check up the details yourself. The gist of the story is that his father was preparing hides and working in his workshop in the 19th century, and he was trying to help his father. A little boy called Louis was trying to help his father, and he was using dangerous tools, and he played around with dangerous tools, and by doing that, Louis took a very sharp tool, and instead of poking onto the hide, and he somehow made the wrong movement, and this very sharp tool went into his eye, which damaged his eye very, very seriously. Because those days there was no the cures of eyes infections, and generally medicines were obviously not a similar standard. We have nowadays he got infected, and he was so bad that his other eye got infected as well. So much so that after a few weeks he became visually impaired, and that led eventually to his pretty much a total blindness. He was devastated because he was not born blind. He became blind. And he was devastated, and he felt that something. He worked on this for a long time, for months and years. Eventually, when he was, a teenager, even a bit older than that, he then worked out that that perhaps we can figure out a way of sorting this out. And he then developed what is known as the Braille writing, which is obviously the visually impaired texts and letters that have got very, very gentle, very subtle indentations that blind people can, when they go over it, they can literally feel the letters, and thereby reading on a very fast speed. And that's become, of course, Braille script has become internationally the way visually impaired people read in all the languages. I know that I've seen Gemaras, I've seen Sidurim in Braille. It's what people, what visually impaired people use. Now, the point I want to bring out is the following. For this boy, he died in 1850. What did we just see? 1850, in the 1850s. That 1850s, quite young. But that's the story of Braille. He made a huge impact to the world of visually impaired people. Now, to Louis himself, to Mr. Braille himself, this incident, which was a short incident, which took minutes, changed his life for the worse, forever. And I'm sure he would have given any money in the world to have his vision restored. There's no question about it that he was devastated about it, and it was the worst moment of his life. There's no question about it. But what is incredible about this, and what gives me a tremendous food for thought, is that for the rest of the world, this became the source of an incredible yeshua for all the visually impaired who were unable to access text beforehand. They were suddenly able, due to his invention, to print and thereby access text, which wasn't possible beforehand. So for him personally, it was a tragedy. But globally for the world, it was an incredible, it led to an incredible success. And as we said, there's millions and millions and millions, millions of books which are published in Braille, and it gives visually impaired people access to text. What we see from here is that what may appear, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes does, for one person, individual, it may appear, and it may be indeed, a tragedy. But at the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has got a master plan, which is well beyond that, which is more global and more universal, which is great, which is really, really great. Of course, he may be directly linked to the whole question of Hashgacha Pratis and Hashgacha Klalis, but without going into that, it's a point which is something to think. Truth is that it triggered my thought that there's another couple in Novi, in the Torah, which do something very, which we see the similar kind of story there as well. Who is that? For them, they're going through desperation and tragedy and crisis, But at the same time, this is a tremendous issue for Klal Yisrael. We see this by Mr. and Mrs. Well, Mrs. Well, who's there? Mrs. Oh, I didn't think of that. I'm thinking of somebody else. I'm thinking of Esther Amalka, for instance. Well, what she did, she gave up her whole future just to be married. She didn't want to be married with Achashverosh. Trust me, she did better. She could have made a better shidduch than that. And, you know, it's royal and it's nice and that, but elegant and that, but it wasn't really where she wanted to be. She sacrificed her life to bring Yeshua to Klal Yisrael and her husband more than anybody else. Modcha was at Sofet the Megillah, we find a Pirish Menu Rav Sanhedrin. People got very upset with him. He could have become a great Talmid Chacham. He could have stayed in the Beis Din in Sanhedrin. He could have been a very great judge and a very, very great Gadol Beis Yisrael. Yet, he stayed in the court of Achashverosh in order to help fellow Yidden. It's not where he wants to be. He wants to sit and learn. The Chazal tells us the last Rashi. No, isn't that the last Rashi? The Pirish Min Rav Sanhedrin. People got quite upset with him, and he didn't stay in his prominent position in the Beis Din because he was hanging around in royalty. He gave up his own personal existence, his own for others. It was difficult for him, I'm sure.
Was he the uncle or the husband?
Both.
But then did he end the divorce over there?
Good question. The Achronim speak about that. Yeah, he probably did. They probably got divorced. There is some Farshim who say that. The Gemara has a certain mashmos as well, that maybe they didn't divorce. It seems to be a discussion. It could be, the Gemara says that she kept on going back to Modcha, so maybe they were not divorced. Okay. Very good question. It's a very good question. She says, because it's Yehori Valiavoy. The Gemara asked the question in Megillah. The Gemara says, because she was Karka Oilam. Karka Oilam means she was extremely passive in everything, and therefore that made into an. Okay. Okay. Rabbi said, we are discussing the halachos of Din Kabbalah's Tainus. So Kabbalah's Tainus. Let's start again from the Siman Tovkuf Samach Beis and we're in Tziv Aleph. So called Tainus Shlo Shokol of Chamo, any Tainus. So if a person wants to take a personal Tainus, right? Or in fact, this is true also for the common fast days. If you do break your fast before it's night, have you fasted? It's not considered a fast because you've got to fast until it's night. Tizak Yechovim. Kol Tainus Shalai Shokolov Chama, any Tainus that you finish before it's night. Tainus Shalai Shlima Tizak Yechovim, then Yishiro Gimel Kechovim Beinonim, Hoshalvon Zerachas Bekech Vasoy Kolorit, which is either there's three medium sized stars visible, or that the moon is bright and is shining on the ground. Hey, no tainus. If you break your fast before that, it's not considered fasting. And if you plan to eat before night, you do not say aneinu. Because aneinu, what's aneinu all about? Aneinu is the tefillah that we say when we fast. So if you're not going to fast till nacht, then it's not considered that you don't say aneinu. Miu. No agin lispal aneinu, afal pish ein mashlim na tzitzik chovim, v'chein da'as miktas ravosa. Now, the Ramah brings another opinion, and that's the machloikas. What happens, interesting question. Okay, what happens if you know you're not, it's a summer fast, and you want to fast because you, let's talk about a communal fast. You know you're not going to be able to fast the whole Shavuos Bet Hamos. You can't make it. It's not going to happen. You can't make it. Perhaps even the doctor said you shouldn't. You're going to break your fast at? Let's say Chatzos. All right. Oh, but let's do it a bit later than that. Let's give it a bit later because of the question I'm going to discuss. Let's say you're going to break the fast at a bit after Chatzos, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, you're going to have to break your fast. Early afternoon, you're going to have to break your fast. Doctor said, lunchtime, you have to break your fast. 2 o'clock, you have to break your fast. Now, I want to know, you're going to have mincha before that, right? You're going to have mincha before that. You're going to have mincha at 1 o'clock. Now, the question is, can you say aninu during mincha, yes or no? You know you're going to break the fast. Can you recite aninu, yes or no? Brilliant, that's exactly the question. That would be the machlokas. So you're explaining the machlokas. So some will say that's exactly the explanation, beautiful. That, well, at the moment you're fasting, so you can say aneinu. Others will say, no, you're going to break the fast, so you can't say aneinu. You know you're going to break the fast. So the Ramah says that, yeah, you can still say aneinu, despite the fact you're going to break the fast. And the Ramah makes the paskins, if you are biyochid on your own, then you can say aninu b'shemei atfila. The belavach yochoy lo yisiv k'mo yishin izbarak of yutas, habal shliach tzibur lo yoyim aninu elim ken mashlim in v'chenu again. Yeah, but if it's a shliach tzibur publicly, then you won't be able to say aninu. Now, there is a question, which is discussed if at the end of the what time does the fast days end? There's a discussion in Shaitzin when exactly the in Shaitzin Zivkanala discusses what is the end of the. You see, I understand Yom Kippur has got to finish when it's Nacht. I understand. Why? Because Yom Kippur is. Because it's what? Yeah, and it's Torah. That's right. The Apostle of Torah says Shabbos Bosan is. So you've got to finish by. You know what, I can perhaps even understand Tisha B'Av, perhaps. But then when it comes to other Drabonon fast days, why do you have to wait so late until Tzitzik Kechovim? Surely you could say, since it's only a wine, this bread, minik, you could break your fast a bit earlier. Ben Ashmoshes, Sofek Drabonon Lekula, you could break the fast a bit earlier. Perhaps you wouldn't have to go all the way till Tzitzik Kechovim, which is fairly late. Shatzin discusses that, and he says perhaps you could argue that there's an argument to say that you could break the fast a bit earlier. The Maisa, if you look in the Luach, I believe that the fast days, the minor fast days, the end of the fast is the earliest man. Have you noticed that? So let's say you've got Nacht, and the next day is the Tarnas. Do we have Sunday fast? For argument's sake, you'll see that it's not the same time than Motzei Shabbos, because you go with a bit more leniency when it comes to the minor fast days. We don't wait, mamash. We cheshbon the time a little bit. Good. Now, Stockholm is the capital of Sweden. Anybody been to Stockholm? I'd love to go once to the. Scandinavian countries. It must be very beautiful. Always my dream is good.
Maybe in the summer we go all of us for like a weekend in Stockholm.
Stockholm is good. Yeah.
All of us.
So in Stockholm we have a problem in the summer. What is the problem in Stockholm? It doesn't get dark. I can tell you about this time. My brother was once invited to speak in a conference. It was in Reykjavik actually, in Iceland, yeah. So he was invited in the summer for a conference to speak. He said, it didn't get dark. The whole night, it didn't get dark. He couldn't have a Mariv. He was bright. Laila kayoim toyer. He said he was bright the whole night. So he came to, was waiting 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. 12 o'clock, he said, okay, fine, I need to go to sleep. So he didn't mind, but just, he said, I'm sure he didn't. He said he's convinced he didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Kiyas Shema in the night. It was bright outside. And he just go to, you put the hotel, he closed all the curtains and everything. It was bright. And then he went to wake up and said he was just bright. All day. He was very happy. He said he went crazy. He was very happy to leave the next day. He spoke and he came back and that was it. He said, it's crazy. You can't live in such a place. That's all right if you're there for one night. But it's so in Stockholm, they have that very question. I don't know, for them, in Iceland, it must be like this for months, yeah. So, but in Sweden, they have a similar kind of question. We're also pretty north, but Sweden is even more north. And there, they have, they said that there's been an on, they, in Stockholm, they say, that there is an old tradition, an old Masoan, old tradition, that they break the summer fast at 9:30 p.m. They say 9:30 could do with anything. No, that's what my father did. That's what my grandfather did. That's my great grandfather. We break our fast because if you wait till it's dark, you're going to wait a long time. You're going to be very hungry.
What makes it
9:30? Why 9:30? I don't know why 9:30. And the question was asked to Rav Ozner, and it's very interesting too what Rav Ozner said. He said, Rav Ozner, can we break the fast at 9:30? He said, because in Eretz Yisrael, what's the latest fast? They don't go late in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they don't have these.
8:30.
Yeah. What can? How are they? Or we also sometimes what Shiva Sabatamos Tisha B'Av can be Shiva Sabatamos.
It's always 10:30.
It's very easy. Yeah, sometimes it's a bit hard. Also, it's summer. It's hot. Yeah. So they asked Rav Ozner, and Rav Ozner replied as follows. He didn't say rubbish. He writes an interesting tshuva. He didn't say rubbish. He said it's true. And that's going to be an important story. We're going to see that in the next few halachas. Is that it's true? Whenever a community accepted a fast day, whenever they even accept a fast, it's always based on a certain minute. That's how long Klal Yisrael fasts. That's how long we fast. So there could be, I'll give you the most extreme example, is probably the example of Tanis Bechoyres. We've the minute, the universal minute is that we fast until after the Siyum. It's a fast day, really. Yeah, but the Klal Yisrael accepted to break the fast. So I'm saying, what the point I'm making is that fast days are kept the way Klal Yisrael accepted it in the first place. So, he says, you could have argued, there's a strong argument to say, that the evening in Stockholm should only fast till 9:30 because that's the way those Jews accepted the fast. For generations and generations, they only fasted till 9:30 p.m. Kind of thing. That's
can I take you back to what you
said quite earlier
about how we...
Let me just finish up. Says, no, you can't do that. It doesn't go communal. You can't just say Stockholm, because then they're going to say, hey, by us in London, we do... London, Manchester, we do six. That's right, yeah. So you can't. Even if there is evidence of some sort of tradition, and Messiah, he says, you can't. It's more collective than communal. And that's what he wants to say. Yeah, okay, yeah.
What does Rav Ozner do if he's in Reykjavik?
What does Rav Ozner do in Reykjavik? He would probably... Yeah, I don't know what Rav Ozner would have done. I don't know. He probably didn't go any much further. Well, he lived in Vienna in his younger years. In the summer, he was often in Switzerland. It's also quite harmless. So I don't know if he would end up in Reykjavik. I'm not sure what he would have done.
How do we calculate Nacht? Question as well. How do we calculate Nacht for the fast days compared to a Moitzi Shabbos? So Moitzi Shabbos was based on this month, and then you've got the remaining time to month.
Yeah, how the Luach over here calculates it, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Is it just a more makele? Is it?
Yeah, there's various ways of calculating Nacht, of course. Nobody goes anymore out there to check the three Kirchhoven because the air pollution.
We had the time from the Union, the United States in old time, and...
But even the Union has a different Zman, I believe, I'm nearly sure. Union has a different... The Tzitzit Kirchhoven of Motzei Shabbos is worked out differently than the end of the fast days. It's worked out differently. If you look in the last few pages of the Ruach, it will tell you exactly how they calculate it, which I don't know how they do, but they calculate it differently. Do you know what I mean? The last few pages, which nobody bothers reading? Do you know the wall... The wall, the Ruach also read it once. The wall... calendar, in the last couple of pages, you read what it says, how they calculate Nacht of Motzei Shabbos, Nacht of Motzei Tanis, they calculate it differently. And that's based on what we're seeing over here, that it's based on how Klal Yisrael accepts it, but 9:30 is not one of the registered acceptances. Okay. Okay, well, fine, we'll do the Siv Beis tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, fine. I wish you a good evening, Abbo Yisai.